and welcome to the House of Comments. My name's Emma Burnell and I'm a Labour blogger, and I'm delighted today to be joined by Karen Lindsay, who is the co-editor of Lib Dem Voice, the leading Lib Dem blog. Hi, Karen.
Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
Great.
Lovely. So there's a lot to talk about this week. Obviously, there has been quite a bit of fallout from the European elections. We thought we'd cover the various challenges to party leadership, but I think we'd probably better start with the most high-profile one, which is the combination of a petition from various Lib Dem members asking Nick Clegg to step down, combined with the polling and spectacular implosion of Matthew Oakeshott. So, Karen, what were your thoughts on this?
Well, I think the first thing to be very careful about is to differentiate between the two. Some of my friends signed that petition. The party is, I mean, when you take a hoofing like that, you do feel a bit fearful, you feel a bit fretful, and a lot of the anxieties that they have going into the general election, you know, I share some of them as well. Well, I don't agree with them that the way to deal with it is to get rid of the leader. But, you know, these are good people who serve the party well. And, you know, we should just they're very sincere, and we should just kind of reach out to them and not condemn them. On the other hand, where Matthew Oakeshott is concerned, now, you could have predicted probably 4 years ago that the European elections were going to be the worst day in our electoral cycle, especially combined with the set of local elections that they were with. I mean, it was never going to be a good result for us. And you could have predicted that that would be the time when he would do something. I mean, he viscerally hates Clegg. A friend of mine was sitting at conference, I think it was 2012, and minding her own business, he came and sat beside her. She had never met him before in her life, and he just started talking about how Vince should be leader and how he needed to get rid of Clegg. So that was so ingrained, and it's in some ways it was a relief that it was him. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, there was no, absolutely. And I was questioning whether it was him, simply because my instinct had been that if it was him, he would have had his name all over it. He'd never been backwards in coming forwards before. So my only questioning of whether it was going to be Lord Oakeshott was because why was it so anonymous?
I know. Well, maybe that was that could actually have been part of the plan to stir things up. Mm. But one of the things that his polls actually showed is that really a change of leader wouldn't make that much difference.
Yeah. Yeah,
it was all quite ironic
that it was being hyped up as.
Yeah, and it was really, I mean, I'm glad he's gone. He did douse the party in poison as he went out the door, but you know that part's over. I'm quite happy to accept that Vince was not part of his plotting. I don't think Vince ever has any control over him. But I think we still do have an issue in that we really need to find some way of bridging that gap between the leadership and many of the activists who are, you know, that their work is necessary for us to do well next year. Mm. So Nick needs to really do a lot of reaching out and get them on side over the next little while. And I think we need to look at what works and what doesn't work. And that's what's really good, that he's announced a review. I mean, obviously you review every election campaign, yeah, but this one's very inclusive, inviting everybody to take part. And what we really need to do is just make sure he listens to what people are saying.
And my impression, and I've written this before, is that Clegg is toxic. And I can't see a way out for him. I can't see things getting better for him. But what can the party do to change their standing? Taking the sense of the leadership aside, it's not just an issue of Clegg. It is an issue for the party as a whole, in terms of trust, in terms of who the voters maybe thought you were, and whether that was fair or not.
Mm-hmm.
What can the party do to turn that around, in your opinion? What would you say?
I think the first thing is that I think we really need to, I mean, it's all very well to say we want a stronger economy and a fairer society, and we have been pivotal in building a recovery that is sustainable, that is creating jobs all across the country, which, if you remember, in the 80s, that didn't happen at all. It was the mass unemployment and it was a total nightmare. But we've been in there and we've done all the stuff that's created more apprenticeships, created more jobs. And that's all very good. But there's nothing emotional that tugs at the heartstrings. It's all kind of very kind of technocratic in a way. It's a bit like the independence referendum up here. All politicians think it's a good idea to argue about figures. Mm. And that just goes completely, most of the electorate. In fact, sometimes I find it difficult to be interested in it.
Mm.
Whereas I want to, talk about, there's nothing, I want something that makes me feel that I need to vote that way. And I'm not sure we're getting that quite yet. We need to talk about the kind of real kind of aspirational stuff. I mean, what we have done, one particular revolutionary thing in terms of shared parental leave. That is going to be really, really good for women.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to be shouting about that. And we never mention it. And that really frustrates me. I mention it as often as I can. Because to me, that just ticks all the boxes of a stronger economy, fairer society, and helping people get on in life. That is, that's the key policy. Also, things that he's done on mental health, things that he's done on making sure disadvantaged kids get extra help in school. These are all very liberal policies, and we need to really hammer them home, and not just the job stuff.
Is that enough? Is that well? My sense, and this isn't just with the Liberal Democrats. I think all three of the mainstream political parties were hammered in some way over the last week in the elections. This wasn't a great election for Labour. The Tories came third in a national election for the first time in their history, and are being extraordinarily complacent about it.
I know.
But I get a sense that the electorate simply doesn't trust us to deliver on promises. So can we make promises that can resonate?
I know. I think as well, I think sometimes you just have to be honest and say, well, you can only do so much. You can say, this is what we want to do.
Mm.
But, there may be circumstances that mean that we can't do it. I mean, going into coalition, I mean, there's one major issue that we didn't keep a promise on. And that kind of seems to have negated in people's eyes the 75% of the stuff in our manifesto that actually did get through. And three of the four big things on the front page of our manifesto have all been implemented. To a greater or lesser extent. The one that we haven't been able to do is constitutional reform, which was blocked by both the Conservatives and Labour. We have done an awful lot of what we said we did. But what I think people don't understand is who we are and what our values are, what makes our hearts beat faster. And I think that's what we need to get better at explaining, and fast.
And do you think that what your values are as Liberals, Liberal Democrats, are what the values of the UK are?
I think so. Yes, and I think the country is very interested in kind of freedom. It's very interested as well. I mean, the anti-establishment guys actually did get into government in 2010. We did want to get in there and shake things up. We do try and shake things up. And we're the people who want to give power away back to ordinary people, to people. We want to bring people and politics closer together. That's what being a Liberal is all about. But I don't think we've managed to get that across.
Is it? I mean, I think that you are completely sincere in what you're saying, but it is very hard to picture someone like, say, David Laws or Jeremy Brown being able to accurately sell themselves as anti-establishment.
I wouldn't be so sure about that. David Laws actually Do you know what really got when I started to like David Laws? Because he was just one of these kind of Orange Booker types who was right wing on the economy that kind of scared me slightly. And then he said that he was in favour of banning smacking.
So,
and that to me was quite a, you know, that's a really kind of, to me, that's a very liberal line to take. And it was a very kind of controversial line to take. And I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, I'm on a rare occasion willing to agree with David Laws on that. But I still don't think he's particularly the face of anti-establishmentism, as it were. I mean, you've got at the moment a leader who's going to take you, I would say, to the next election.
Yes.
I think that the spectacular implosion of the plotting over the last week, and quite possibly the most inept plotting that even more so, I think, than the was it the Facebook plot or the Gmail plot against Gordon Brown? I'm trying to remember what they called it. But yeah, again, very, very poorly managed plot against Gordon
Brown. The Hewitt and Hoon thing.
The Hewitt and Hoon thing, yeah. Yeah. Quite extraordinary that they went on to be captured by Panorama trying to flog
it. I suspect that would probably be the case, but we're a long way from there yet. I spent a lot of time over the last month speaking to a lot of voters and a lot of Liberal Democrat held seats, albeit mainly in Scotland.
The prevailing message
that I was getting from
many
them
seats
was,
predicted at
first
the
thing,
election,
is that they didn't want independence.
Then have to
the
go.
Second thing was that they really, really liked their local MP, and that kind of means a lot up here. So I suspect, I can see in Scotland, although things were very bad for us last week, I think next year is going to be a very, very different election.
So you think you'll hang on to most of your seats?
I've always said that I think we could hang on to the overwhelming majority of them. I'm not going to make any bets at all. We're going to try and hang on to all of them.
Sure. Okay. Well, I mean, I think that's probably would be extremely unlucky. I think you will lose some seats, but it will be interesting to see. I mean, I think there is an incumbency factor. I think there are some MPs who are very well dug in their local communities, who are probably safer than people would expect them to be right now. So it will be very, very interesting to see what happens.
And we've also got some very good kind of new candidates as well in target seats. And you have places like Oxford West and Abingdon, where we've got Leila Moran. She's a really, really fantastic, and she's got a really good, strong campaign team behind her. So I wouldn't be surprised if we won in places like that. But I kind of wanted to think as well about what one of the kind of tragedies in a way of this week for me, a Liberal Democrat, is that all the heat was under us when, in fact, over the weekend, we'd had, you know, a few MPs come on and give Ed Miliband an absolute pasting for his performance during the European elections. Is he safe, do you think?
Yes, I think so. I think we have had, at the beginning of the week, there was quite a bit of heat on it, but it pretty much died down. I think that the Labour Party are crazy, but we're not so crazy we're going to spend the next 6 months talking to ourselves about ourselves rather than trying to fight an election. There are plenty of lessons for us to learn from this campaign. It was, as I said earlier, it wasn't a good result for Labour. It was better in the local elections, but not as good as we might have liked. And I think Labour have to be more canny in terms of recognising that we do now live in an era of four-party politics. And what we might have once expected, we can no longer expect. And what might once have worked for us will no longer necessarily work. I think there were real mistakes made in the campaign. I wrote openly about how I thought that our party political broadcast attacking Nick Clegg was not just fairly childish and silly and unuseful and unhelpful in terms of actually our attracting former Lib Dem voters, I think, who it was mainly aimed at. I don't think it's what would attract them. But also, it's a missed opportunity to make a better case for Labour, and there's a good case to be made. You know, we have some really, really fantastic policies, of which I'm very, very proud. But we have this terrible sort of sense that once you've announced something, that's it, it's been sold to the electorate. And I think if you stop 100 people on the street, they wouldn't have the first clue about what Labour's policy on rents are, which is a really fantastic policy, something I'm so proud of, particularly as a housing campaigner. You know, managing rents better, making sure that rents aren't rising exponentially, managing tenancies better, making sure that tenancies aren't too short for people who need long-term stability. Getting rid of letting agent fees. All of these things are really, really good policies and really important. But the idea that we announce it once and there's an article on it in The Guardian, that means everybody knows it's happening. It's just wrong. So we need to get our comms much, much, much better and much sharper. And we need to be much more optimistic about the offer that we're making to the voters, because it is a good offer. It just needs pulling together as an offer rather than simply saying, you know what, we're a bit better than the other lot.
Yeah, we had the same problem with one of the videos that we put out during the campaign, which was all about another party. And there was nothing at the end that said, actually, no, we're against all of that. And this is why you need to vote for us. And I wrote an article about that as well, kind of saying, you know, that was a missed opportunity.
And that's it. You only get so many opportunities in a campaign. Why waste one of them? And the thing with that, the Nick Clegg video, it probably would have been perfectly funny if it had been made by 10 o'clock live or something. I mean, and if Labour press office then retweeted it, wouldn't have a problem with that. But putting it out from ourselves, it's not what a political party should be doing, really, in my opinion. And I think there are far better things that we can and should be saying about what our offer is to voters and how we are going to make their lives better. And that's what we are there for.
And then, of course, there was that poster as well, the VAT one. Well, you don't even have VAT on food and all that kind of stuff. And did you read the report about Ed Balls and Douglas Alexander having a right rammy, as we would call it up here at a meeting?
I think there are a lot of questions to be asked about how well the campaign was run. And certainly I will be among the people asking them and have already started asking them.
It's going to be quite interesting, Emma, because Douglas Alexander seems to be taking a much more managerial role in the Scottish referendum as well, and I really don't want him to muck this up.
Yeah, he has an interesting track record. I'm not wishing to be rude, but I believe he cut his teeth on the Dukakis campaign in America. He was that young then, I think, to be fair.
He must have been six.
Not quite. I remember the Dukakis campaign, so it's me you're talking to now. But I think he was, you know, late teens. Because I think he's got about a decade on me, which made him late teens for the Dukakis. David Miliband, whose campaign he ran for leadership, was obviously the front runner. And that didn't end as he would have expected it to.
Indeed, not. Did it end as anybody expected it to?
Well, having worked on Ed's campaign, I would like to say I thought it was going to end that way all along. But it was so knife edge. Anyone who told you they thought what was going to, you know, they thought they knew what was going to happen would be lying to you.
I'll tell you something, though, that really annoyed me during the campaign is that the paucity of political debate, as summed up by an article in the New Statesman last week, that compared Nick Clegg and Ed Miliband eating bacon sandwiches.
I mean, I'm not being funny, Karen, but do you look good eating a bacon sandwich?
Oh, no, I would look ridiculous eating a bacon sandwich. Everybody
does.
You're
right. It is ridiculous. And honestly, if that's an electoral issue, then I think we all need to take a very long, hard look at ourselves. There are so many important things happening in the world at the moment. One of the things we're coming on to later is, you know, the terrible violence against women and girls. And, you know, we've seen some really horrific things this week in terms of the big the gang rape in Malaysia. The woman who was very nearly executed by the state for apostasy I'm trying to remember where that was. Sudan, isn't it? Yeah.
Sudan.
Sorry, my mind went completely blank there. And, you know, again, lots and lots of issues in India. We've got, you know, really serious economic issues that are long term, particularly I work in local government. There are huge, huge challenges in adult social care, in pensions, in child social care, in all the services that councils have traditionally offered. And what are our press talking about? How people eat a bacon sandwich? It's like,
oh, I know.
It's just so disheartening.
Yeah. Absolutely, and I did actually feel quite sorry for Ed on that
absolutely.
One.
I mean, you know, should his comms team have sent him out there? No, but on the other hand, can we all please grow up a little bit?
Yeah.
Exactly. let's move on to some of the foreign affairs issues that I've just raised. I think we've probably covered the depressing aspects of the campaign quite enough. Let's depress ourselves on a global scale. Obviously, you wanted to bring this up, and I think it'd be quite interesting to get your take on what can Britain do when it comes to these kinds of international issues? What can our role be in trying to make the whole world better?
Well, I think that is one of the things. It was a very good article in The Observer today by the chief executive
Indeed,
of Water
I saw it. I've tweeted it out.
If people in India had access to toilets, they wouldn't have to go outside and put themselves at, you know, and put themselves at risk of attack. That is, you know, it's such a simple thing. And I know it's something that Lynn Featherston has been working on at the Department of International Development. It's quite a lot of projects like that. So it's that sort of aid. I mean, somebody said to me on Twitter the other day that we should just stop aid to these countries.
No,
and I think, no, absolutely not. We actually need to give people the way of kind of, you know, we need to do education. We need to do, you know, we need to give women ways of not being in that sort of danger. And, you know, effecting that sort of cultural change also takes quite a long time. We do have to make representations at the highest level to governments as well. And what I think has been quite interesting in the last few years is that you have actually had some politicians, some male politicians, talking about sexual violence, which you never had before. And seeing William Hague going with Angelina Jolie and things like that, that's all a step in the right direction. A little step.
Yeah.
It's not enough yet. And I'm kind of hoping, I've kind of got my fingers crossed for Hillary in 2016 in America, because I think what she did as Secretary of State for women and girls was
Absolutely.
Pretty good. And to have her in the top job would
Indeed.
Be even better.
And, you know, symbolically excellent as well. You know, I think having women in, you know, senior positions in politics, actually just the visual can change the world. Just the visual can change the way that we think about these things. And I know that having lots of women at, you know, senior levels in the Labour Party has changed the party. Is it perfect? No. Would never ever say that about, you know, the way that we are now. But is it better? My God, yes. And it's really changed in the last 20 years. You know, during the time that I've been involved, it really has massively made a difference.
I mean, I was at a session at the spring conference in York when one of our baronesses was saying that actually the election of all the women, Labour women, in 1997, it's taken a while, but this is now why childcare is at the
absolutely,
top of the agenda.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and it's just really important that we get more women elected. And one of the things I'm really annoyed at Nick Clegg for is that he hasn't promoted enough women and put one in the cabinet, because we certainly have plenty that are capable.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that you've got, you know, women at the top of your party who could be playing a higher profile role, not least Lynn Featherstone. You've got Jenny Willett.
Willett, yeah.
Who, you know, I've always found quite impressive.
Yeah, she is excellent, actually. I met her way back in 1998 when she went for the Chesterfield selection, and I was working for another candidate, but we were both so impressed with her that we ended up helping her and her successful Cardiff Central campaign.
Oh right, well that's obviously a very good endorsement then. If you were so impressed with her as a rival.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and I think there are. I mean, obviously, I don't want to stray too far from our foreign affairs focus. But one of the things that has obviously happened to your party this week is that the Renard scandal has reared its ugly head once again.
Indeed.
And that is another. And I have throughout this entire time always said the Renard scandal is not just an issue for the Lib Dems, and anyone trying to make this a Lib Dems bad, us good. Mm-hmm. question will be failing their own party, because there are questions to be asked in all parties and throughout politics, but it doesn't help your party in terms of the many issues that you've been talking about, and women's visibility, that one of the most visible things that's happening is this scandal.
And that's absolutely right, but I don't want to go into the specifics of that particularly, purely because I don't think any public comment by me who hasn't seen the evidence and all the rest of it is going to be helpful to the proceedings that are still going on. I think I need to keep quiet on that. But what I can say is that I am absolutely 100% sure that sort of situation would not happen now, because we've gone a long way to implementing every single recommendation that was in Helena Morrissey's report. Setting up the proper procedures and everything. And you know, getting people trained, getting people made aware of what is and isn't appropriate behaviour.
Well, I certainly hope you're right for all the people coming through politics and whatever party they're in.
Absolutely,
it's vital that it becomes a safe space.
Nobody should ever be put through a situation where they're made to feel uncomfortable by somebody in power, wherever that happens.
Indeed. So in terms of foreign policy, I mean, I think you're right about, I think we're in danger of agreeing massively on everything at the moment. In terms of, foreign policy and aid, one of the things that might be interpreted from the election results, particularly the European election results, is that we are possibly a country that is turning in on itself slightly, is becoming more isolationist. Can people like you and I, who really see the value of aid, not just to the people in the countries that receive the aid, but the effects that it has on the world as a whole?
International relations.
How do we continue to win that argument?
I think we need to make it loudly. I mean, this is one of the things that I don't think that we can't deal with the rise of anybody else by compromising on our own values.
Indeed, absolutely.
And weird. We have to, I think we need to be very clear that we're not going to pander to anybody. And that we just need to make the case. We need to tell the stories of people who have been helped. We need to show how, like you say, how this is a benefit for everybody. But you see, every year, the TV fundraising things, comic relief and sport relief, raising an absolute fortune. So people get it.
They do. There is a disconnect, isn't there, between the amount of money we're willing to give to comic relief and the probably much smaller amount of money that comes from our direct taxation percentage-wise.
But it is. I mean, 0.7% isn't, it's not a huge amount of money in comparison to the size of the problem.
Absolutely. So, okay, I think we've probably agreed violently on violence.
We had a rammy the last time I was on.
We did. What's going on? We're both becoming far too soft in our old age. So let's finish on the Newark by-election, which is obviously coming forward. Do you have any predictions? Do you think the Lib Dems are going to take that one?
Well, do you know, stranger things have happened. That's certainly true. Mind you, I think that might have been in an episode of Doctor Who.
Do you know, I would never write a Liberal Democrat candidate off. Having said that, I think that I'm probably not going to be spending all day hitting the phones because it's my daughter's birthday.
It's
been the kind of forgotten by-election. I was very involved in 1999 in the by-election that never was. Do you remember that one, the by-election that never was?
Where was that? No, you'll have to remind me.
The then Labour MP was and her agent were tried for some sort of expenses problem. They were found guilty.
Oh, was this Helen Grant?
Until her appeal was heard a month later, it was thought that there was going to be a by-election because she would forfeit her seat. Mm. And at that point, I was incredibly heavily pregnant.
Oh, gosh.
And I ended up having a picture taken of my flowery dungarees for a leaflet, in which somebody put words into my mouth that said, as an expectant mother.
Oh, yeah, I can just see you saying
like,
that.
Nobody would ever say that.
Yeah.
That's kind of my Newark by-election story. But I have to say that I would be absolutely horrified if somebody like Roger Helmer ended up in the House of Commons. It's bad enough that he's in Brussels.
Indeed. Once again, we're going to agree on that one. I mean, his announcement today that the NHS should fund gay cures, terrifies me, almost just chills me to the bone.
He's not that great on women either.
No, he's not good on women. He's not good on gay issues. He's not good generally. He's not good in
He actually makes Godfrey Bloom look progressive.
Indeed.
When did you last clean behind your fridge?
My fridge is built in. There is no physical way to clean behind my fridge. I have a fitted kitchen, so, a fitted kitchen and a cleaner. So I am everything that Godfrey Bloom hates.
Oh, dear.
But there you go. So, I mean, I really hope that UKIP don't take this election. It's my sense that I think it might be a bridge too far for them. I think a lot of people were saying that about the Europeans, and they just stormed it. I don't think polling companies are yet set up to deal with UKIP. They don't know how to ask the right questions, or indeed how to interpret the data in such a way, because there isn't enough history. People are changing so rapidly that the polling companies, who have different formulas with what they do with people's voting history, are massively undercounting what UKIP are and what's happening with them. So I wouldn't like to rule anything in or out at the moment, but I would certainly hope that the people of Newark get out and vote increased numbers, because I think that one of the big problems that is helping the rise of UKIP is voter apathy. The word voter apathy, as if it's the voters' fault. I think there are, I think everyone, political apathy is perhaps the problem.
If a third of the electorate voted is definitely going to skew the result.
Yeah.
When you know that next year there's going to be the turnout will be much more healthy.
Yeah.
Not healthy enough, but you're going to have an awful lot more people voting.
Okay, well, we shall see what the result is on the day. I can't remember the date of the election now. I should have looked that up before I started talking, shouldn't I?
It's the 5th of June.
5th of June. Obviously, you've got a reason to remember that.
Yes.
Okay, well, we shall... So it's this week. It's this week, gosh.
Yes.
For some reason I got in my head it was next week. Clearly, I've done too many elections in too short a time period.
Yeah. Yes, you can count yourself lucky when we've got a referendum in 101 days' time, and we'll be all out for that.
Indeed. And lots of my Labour friends are doing the same. One of my very, very closest friends who's on our NEC, Joanna Baxter, is really banging the drum for Labour and the Better Together campaign. It's going to be very interesting. My view is that given my accent and the fact that I've lived further north than Tottenham, have, and that I want the unions to stay together, the best thing I can do is keep out of it and not be patronising and go and tell people, Scottish people, what they should vote. It didn't work very well for the Guardian in Ohio, if I remember rightly.
Yes, one of our candidates up here actually ended up, he was the one that was quoted in the Guardian, and his letter was read out by on Canadian TV by the man that really took objection to it.
Oh really? Gosh. Yes, that was so. I'm sort of keeping my head down and wishing you all the best of luck from a distance, because I think that's probably the most helpful thing I can do.
Absolutely, but we're also going to talk about, we're not going to talk about Tower Hamlets as well.
Oh, we were going to talk about Tower Hamlets, yes.
What is going on there? I mean, I'm 400 miles away and I'm just, what, who is this man?
Oh, it's just horrendous. It really is. And it's so, so depressing, because Tower Hamlets is a borough that really, really, really needs leadership. You know, it's a pace of incredible poverty in British terms. You know, it really has some of the most deprived areas in the entire country, right next door to Canary Wharf. And so that obviously skews a lot of things, because all the investment that goes into Canary Wharf and all the for example, house prices are crazy there, because lots of people want to live near Canary Wharf. Mm-hmm. When you've got things like the affordable rent regime, which is the new way that the governments work out what social housing rents should be, and that is based on local area rents. So mm-hmm. obviously, if you've got an area where some of the rent is so high and some of the rent is, you know, then that will skew upwards what the affordable rent, in quotes, yes. would be set at. And what we've got is a man who was thrown out of the Labour Party for... having some very dodgy connections, and then went on to work with those dodgy connections to get himself elected as Mayor of Tower Hamlets, and we are now reaping that whirlwind. Mm. You know, the count was, I mean, I knew people in the building at the count, and they said it was very, very frightening. And democracy shouldn't be frightening.
I know. And is there an issue with postal votes as well?
It sounds like there might be. I mean, I don't want to yeah. prejudge anything. Yeah. There is an investigation that's taking place. The Electoral Commission are looking into it, and various other bodies are, I think, going to be looking into it. I think it's possible the CLG are investigating as well. So I don't want to prejudge anything, but certainly questions have been raised about postal votes.
But and people actually not being scared to leave the building. That should never, ever, ever happen.
No, absolutely. That's not how we behave in a democracy. You don't like a result. You have a little cry into your beer. You don't threaten people with violence.
Or you might start a sweary thread on Facebook like I did about midnight last Sunday night, which was quite cathartic. It's better than doing it on Lib Dem Voice, I suppose. But it's
not the right place for it.
But in terms of postal voting, I mean, I always vote by post. I'm scarred by my experience in 1997 when I was working in a Target seat and I didn't get home to vote. I reckon Mrs. Pankhurst might have approved
to vote.
Sorry?
That's one of the things we always say, is you've got to make sure your activists vote.
I know. To be fair, I think Mrs. Pankhurst might have been okay with what I was doing that day. But still, I've been scarred by that experience and have had a postal vote ever since. So I wouldn't want to see anything that actually restricted access to postal voting.
No, and that's the thing, is postal voting is a really good, important thing. I think probably it's a temporary thing. And I would suspect that sooner or later we're going to get internet-based voting. But it is a really important thing, and what I don't want to see it lost because a few people are allegedly misusing it. Mm. And, you know, it's so important for older people, for mothers of young children, people who find it hard to, you know, I was talking to a woman on polling night who just got back from work. It was 8:30. She's like, I just can't go out. You know, I've physically drained. Mm. And she she would have done so, you know, would postal vote would have been perfect for her.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people we need. And we need to remember when we talk about postal voting that the vast majority of it is, you know, not misused. And not panic and throw the baby out with the bathwater.
And people who get postal votes turn out to vote as well.
Indeed. Yeah, it's always much higher turnout.
Yeah. So, yeah, like you say, we have to be... Is that something else we've agreed on? Oh, dear.
I know this is a very, very consensual podcast. It's a shame I couldn't get a Conservative along to disagree with both of us.
I know. It's been quite enjoyable, though, because it's actually nice to kind of talk through issues rather than argue with each other.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think that that's what we do try to do on the House of Commons. And I mostly am good at it. I was possibly slightly less good at it the week we had Toby Young on. And I rather infamously called him a very bad word. But yes, generally that's the aim of the podcast. So on that note, Karen, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks, it's been great.
And I wish you every luck, particularly with the referendum.
Thanks very much.
And I'd also like to thank Audio Boo for hosting the podcast and Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.com for our funky theme music. And next week it will be Mark, I believe.